Hello and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. This is Reverend Paul McLean, Associate Rector of Calvary Episcopal Church, located in the heart of downtown Memphis in one of the oldest parishes in the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. Every Thursday at 8 a.m., we have the opportunity to speak with interesting people and to learn about the role that faith plays in their lives. We are broadcasting from WYXR 91.7 FM in Memphis, Tennessee. Today I'm joined by Reverend Lisa Anderson, Executive Director of Room in the Inn, and we will talk about ways this amazing ministry is making a difference in the lives of unsheltered neighbors and countless volunteers. We are also joined by Emily Austin, Minister of Communication for the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, and Christine Fox, who works for Room in the Inn through the AmeriCorps Vista program, is a parishioner at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church, and is heavily involved here at WYXR. Emily calls her our connective tissue for this whole segment. Emily and Christine, I know it's spring pledge time here at WYXR. Tell us more about how our listeners can help.
Yeah, you know, I guess it was like 2 years ago now. Is that the beginning of the pandemic? Because WYXR was kind of born during the pandemic.
That's true. That's absolutely right. They were born during the pandemic.
Yeah, and at the diocese, the folks here at WYXR reached out to us and said, hey, would y'all be interested in having a weekly radio hour here at WYXR? And Bishop Phoebe, I don't think she batted an eye. She said, yes, absolutely.
We'd love to do that.
We would love to do that. And so we've been doing that ever since.
Yeah,
and it's been an amazing opportunity for us to be sharing what it means to live a life of faith and how that fleshes itself out here in Memphis and all over the country. And I don't know that we would have had this opportunity to have people share their stories and tell us what God is doing in their life if it hadn't have been for WYXR.
Right, yeah. WYXR has really just impacted my life, and by bringing Faithfully Memphis to the air. I've got some nerves this morning. I know.
Well, I remember when we first, we had probably only been doing the show for maybe a few months, and I got a message from you, Christine, and I didn't know you yet, and you said, oh my gosh, I was listening to Faithfully Memphis this morning on WYXR, and I was, I think that it was a show with Jerry Endicott, who is now at Church of the Holy
Apostle in Cairoville, that's right.
And then you've listened to a show with Father Tom Momberg, who's just now about to be serving at All Saints Episcopal Church, and those two shows just really helped to solidify some of the things that were in your heart. And you've since become very engaged with the Episcopal Church here in West Tennessee. And I think that this is a connection that never would have happened without WYXR.
That is absolutely true. That's right. I heard Father Tom on the episode where the Lynching Sites Project was being discussed.
Yeah.
And he was spoke a little bit about his church, Holy Trinity, and so I showed up.
Yeah, you did.
Like
you
two weekends up. After.
Yeah, you showed up in a very big way.
I did show up in a very big way. So now, yes, I've recently been confirmed in the Episcopal Church, and I've become a student at Memphis Theological Seminary, which also kind of was a WYXR thing. I reached out to Jerry Endicott, as you said, from Holy Apostle, and we have become just really great, good friends. And yeah, I mean, WYXR is just, it really is building community in Memphis.
It is. And one of the coolest things about it is that when people make a pledge of support, they are fostering those relationships and fostering the sharing of culture that and the relationships that are being built right here on our own streets. And those, and I think that later on, Paul and Lisa are going to talk a lot about how when people of faith and people who care about their hometown come together, really amazing things can happen. And if that is not the story of WYXR, I don't know what is.
It absolutely is.
And that's why I think it is just so important that today, anyone who's listening, please go to WYXR.org, make a pledge of support. No gift is too small. No gift, certainly no gift is too big. But we, you know, this is a place where conversations like the ones that we have every week on Faithfully Memphis are happening.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. If I have ever Facebook friended you because of WYXR, you should pledge right now.
Yes, absolutely. if you are a friend of Christine, then you are a friend of WYXR. So go to WYXR.org, make your gift of support because it's a support of conversations worth having.
Yes, and the Memphis community, which we all love dearly.
Yeah, we do. We do.
Thanks, Emily and Christine. Tomorrow is the feast day of one of our saints of the church, one of my most beloved saints, and I just learned our guest, Lisa Anderson's, one of her most beloved saints, Catherine of Siena. She was the youngest of 25 children of a wealthy dye maker in the 14th century, and at the age of six, she had a remarkable vision that decided her life's vocation. Walking home from a visit, she stopped on the road and gazed upward, oblivious to everything around her. And she said, "I beheld our Lord seated in glory with St. Peter, St. Paul, and St. John." She went on to say later that Jesus smiled on her and blessed her. From then on, Catherine spent most of her time in prayer and meditation, despite her mother's attempts to force her to conform and be like other girls. To settle matters, Catherine cut off her hair, her chief beauty. Her family harassed her continually, but in the end, convinced that she was deaf to all opposition, her father let her do as she would, close herself away in a darkened room, fast, and sleep on boards. She later joined the Dominican Order of Nuns. Catherine had numerous visions and was also tried most severely by temptations. Frequently, she felt totally abandoned by the Lord. At last, in 1366, Jesus appeared with Mary and the heavenly host and espoused her to himself, so ending her years of lonely prayer and struggle. She became a nurse, as Dominican nuns regularly did, caring for patients with leprosy and cancer, whom other nurses were afraid or disliked to treat. Catherine reminds me of Constance and her companions, who ministered tirelessly and selflessly during the yellow fever epidemic in Memphis in the late 1800s. Opinion in Siena was sharply divided about whether Catherine was a saint or a fanatic, but when the bishop of the region was appointed as her confessor, he helped her to win full support from the Dominican Mother House. Catherine was a courageous worker in time of severe plague. She visited prisoners condemned to death, and she was constantly called upon to arbitrate feuds and to prepare troubled sinners for confession. During her brief 33-year lifetime, Catherine wrote hundreds and hundreds of letters to persons from all walks of life, ranging from kings and popes to peasants and prisoners. In one of the parishes I served, the ministry of writing notes, cards, and letters to homebound parishioners and others is called the Catherine of Siena Guild. One of the graces of these last 2 years of COVID is that many people took the time to write letters to persons who had meant something in their lives, many times people they had been out of touch with for many, many years. That little touch of receiving a thoughtful note from another human being kept us all connected during a time when we were often denied the human touch of a hug or the intimacy of a face-to-face conversation over coffee like we're having this morning. The notes, cards, and letters for many became our lifeline. Now that COVID conditions have improved, I hope we will not stop this practice. Hearing the story of Catherine of Siena reminds us of the amazing therapeutic power of a handwritten letter. Emily and Christine, please tell us how we can send a little love and support in a letter from home to WYXR.
Sure thing, Paul. Well, just, you know, as a reminder, just go to WYXR.org to do any of the things that we're about to tell you about. Yes. That is the place to go, WYXR.org. You can make a donation there. You can also listen to live radio. You know, sometimes you may not, if you're driving through one of those kind of low, bad spots here in Memphis, it might be hard to get the frequency, but you can always listen to live radio on the website. But there, one of the ways that we are really encouraging people to give during this pledge drive is to become a member of WYXR, right, Christine?
Yes, yes. There are several levels of membership, and that is just, you know, a monthly donation that mm-hmm. WYXR can then count on, right, and budget for the things that they need to continue to provide us with this great community radio. There's all kinds of equipment in here that I know is real expensive.
Yeah, yeah. I think that this is a fairly small studio that we're in, and it's probably worth more than my home. it's there's a lot of really nice equipment, but more importantly, there are some amazing people on staff of WYXR that make it possible for them to curate shows like WYXR. And monthly pledging and making a monthly donation really helps to keep the lights on from day to day. And so if you can become
yes,
monophonic.
Uh-huh. And stereo. We could say it in stereo.
Oh, yes. Yes. Stereo.
Yeah,
we're saying it in stereo. You can become a monophonic donor for $20 a month. That's $20 a month. That's like, I mean, I feel like that's about a Netflix subscription,
yeah,
right?
And I think that's about right.
Yeah, and that does not hit at all. We don't even bat our eye.
And there is actually, I think they still have the earbud membership, which is $10 a month.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
No, okay, y'all, that I think that we just paid $10 for one coffee across the hall at right here at Crosstown. So you can do $10 a month, right? There's a stereo for $50 a month if you want to continue to give that way. Hi-fi. Well, you want to do like kind of a voice effect on hi-fi? Hi-fi. That's $100 a month. And that is keeping radio like the kind that you listen to on WYXR on the air every month. Go to WYXR.org, make your pledge of support, and then they will take care of the rest for you, right?
Yes, amen. They sure will. And you can always do a one-time donation. If you're having such a good time listening to us here on Faithfully Memphis this morning, just, you know, go to the app, go to the website, or give a call, maybe. I don't know.
I don't think that you're going to get on the phone with us.
You can't call us right now.
Yeah. But someone else will answer the phone, right?
Someone else.
Yes. Someone who's probably a little bit more official than us.
Yes.
Paul?
Oh, thanks, Emily and Christine, for your passion and for your sound effects. Loving that.
We do what we can.
It is a joy to have my friend Reverend Lisa Anderson here. And Christine and Emily, I hope you two will join in our conversation as well. And Lisa, I'd like to begin. Just tell us what Room in the Inn is and how it got started.
Room in the Inn is a 501c3 nonprofit, a faith-based ministry that started a little over 12 years ago in a small congregation in East Memphis who was looking for outreach opportunities in the community. And really looking for ways to impact shelter needs in Memphis. And so we started welcoming guests into our congregation space. We had a big building that wasn't being used effectively and sat empty a lot. And we felt like that was, we were being called to find ways to maximize that. So we began to shelter people and have done that for the last 12 years.
It's amazing. And this is the church you pastor, Colonial
That's
Presbyterian?
Right. Colonial Cumberland Presbyterian, right?
Yeah. And it's just been amazing how the parishioners there. I got to meet a number of them when you spoke at our Lenten preaching series, and how they've just been so supportive and embraced this vision.
That's right. They, you know, it was really, we thought that it would be an individual church outreach ministry, and that's what we intended it to be. As our congregation shared with other people how meaningful it had become to them, then other people in the community wanted to be part of it. We have 55 congregational partners now from about 17 different denominations, faith traditions, other groups and nonprofits that are participating in that shelter. So it's grown, you know, beyond our imaginations, and provided opportunities to do other things that were impactful for the unsheltered community.
Yeah, and it's really, with that large broad-based participation, it hasn't been hard on any congregation. I know that we in Calvary take one night a week during the more the academic calendar year. I think our night recently has been Friday. Mm-hmm. But by spreading this out, you know, each congregation takes a night, one night a week. Is that still how it works?
That's right. And congregations have different models. Calvary does once a week during the season. And we typically, pre-COVID, had 2 5-month seasons. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is the drastic differences in temperature in Memphis.
Yeah.
So winter depends on you know what year it is around here, but it's dangerous for people who are living on the street. Summer sometimes is just as dangerous. Mm-hmm. So we have 2 5-month seasons. During COVID, we were not able to do that. But congregations choose based on their abilities. So some congregations do every week, some do twice a month, and we have very small congregations that do once a month. So it does spread out the work, and it offers a lot of different people the opportunity.
Yeah. At Calvary, we there are many assignments you can take. If you know that you may have to be away that evening, if you want to drop off some food or drop off some snacks or things that could be served for breakfast in the morning, or if you want to help do some setup. During the day. But one of the great joys of this program is actually having dinner with the guest. And usually at Calvary, I don't know if this is still the model, it's about 14 guests.
We do 12 to 15, right. Never more than 15.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a major emergency situation if it was more than 15. And the reason for that is that Room in the Inn is a hospitality ministry.
Yeah.
And to have relationships, to really practice hospitality, those small numbers make it possible.
Yeah. One of the things Christine Todd, our outreach director, who's very much involved with Room in the Inn and a lot of other ministries, makes a point, especially when she talks to young people, but I was really struck by this too. She said, instead of talking about people as the homeless, talk about persons experiencing homelessness or being unsheltered. And that changes your perspective. When I had these conversations one-on-one with these 14 guests, with guys particularly in my age range, they're just like me in a lot of ways. We talk about sports. We talk about the Grizzlies. We talk about just things going on in life, a little bit about their stories. Many of them are from rural Mississippi towns like I am. And we can really connect on that level. And it's amazing how we can do this broad swath, like the homeless are a totally different set of people, when it really there are so many connections that we have. And that's just been an amazing part of this ministry, because it is so intimate and the connections you can make.
I think that is what I love most about it, is how it impacts the people who are serving as much as it impacts the people being served. Mm-hmm. And it changes the way that we see each other. Sometimes it goes both ways. You know, people who have this experience of living on the street for whatever reason have an opinion of those of us who are not in that situation. And sometimes that's true for churches.
Yeah.
You know, people don't feel welcome because they feel so different, or congregations may not understand how to interact because they have preconceived ideas about who these people are. And so what Room in the Inn has done is break down some of those barriers.
Yeah.
And allowed congregations to meet people, to have real conversation, and to understand, these are folks that have just had, for whatever reason, circumstances that could happen to me tomorrow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, today we obviously were celebrating the visions of Catherine of Siena, And tell us about how you were given a vision of a recuperative care center and how that vision has been realized over the last couple of years.
Well, vision, you know, I think people have thought that I had some little bit crazy visions like Catherine sometimes. I have felt that personally. But when we first began to welcome guests at Colonial that first year, and for 3 years it was just our congregation, the first 3 years, and the very first tiny group of people, six individuals that first month, two of those people were very ill. One of them had pneumonia. We had facilitated getting them to the ER, but they were only there for a few hours and then discharged from the ER, never inpatient in the hospital. So our small group of people then began to have this call to take care of that couple. One of them had a cancer diagnosis and the other had pneumonia. And they were literally living on the street. And so finding ways to help them to get the health care that they need, finding a way to not be in the elements, it was just heartbreaking. I was a hospital chaplain for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And it was impossible for me not to think about that constantly. Sure. And I can't imagine being ill and having to live in those conditions. So from the very beginning of Room in the Inn, that was a vision and a hope and a prayer. Our very first board meeting when we established Room in the Inn, people ask, you know, where do you see this going? And in the minutes, it mentions a recuperative care model. Wow. Because I just felt like if there was a gap, that was a huge one, that people were often just put right back on the street, very ill. Mm-hmm. And cut their life short.
Yeah. Well, how did the building come about?
We, well, you know, the pandemic closed our shelter program, and so after just a few days of being at home, mm-hmm. doing, you know, feeling helpless as we were shut down, you know, thinking it's going to be a short-term thing, and then realizing very quickly this is not a short-term thing, and this is going to impact the people that we serve in a big way. So began to work with other agencies, the Community and Housing Development Department at the City of Memphis, developed a provider group that was meeting regularly to talk about the needs and how we were going to meet those, to help meet those together, which was wonderful for us all to be talking together, other, you know, people who were doing what we were doing. And so the load was not on one agency. We were sharing that load. Well, I volunteered us to do a pilot of the recuperative care program. So we would accept calls from hospitals who desperately needed to free up those beds that people needed for COVID, but had nowhere to send people who were unsheltered. So we did a little case management around hotel stays for them, and just begin to report those numbers, and people were like, whoa, we didn't understand that this was a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, we never realized that leaving the hospital still ill was such an issue for people who were unsheltered. So in that process, conversations started, some CARES Act dollars were talked about and came into Memphis specifically to impact homelessness and how that was, how it was impacting the lives of those people during COVID. And some good conversation led to some permanent solutions. You know, we were doing a crisis intervention, but also thinking ahead to the future. So the Collins Chapel Connectional Hospital property is on Ayer Street and has been empty for a couple of decades, had really gotten into a bad condition. I had been looking at the property for a couple of years, like this would be a perfect location in the mm-hmm. medical district. And at that time, the director, Paul Young, connected us with the bishop of the CME Church, and the CME Church owns that property. So we were able to form these conversations around leasing that property to open the first recuperative care center in the Mid-South. really in a three-state area.
It's amazing. Lisa's led me and others on tours of the facility and encourage you to go by and check
Absolutely.
It out. It's just phenomenal, and it's something we don't think about as people who are experiencing unsheltered homelessness. When they leave the hospital, they don't have a place to go to be cared for.
That's right.
And it's difficult for them sometimes to get into the hospital, period.
Mm-hmm.
So it's meeting a great need there. Tell us also about the Family Inn program and the Family Advocates program.
What we were doing as a board, thinking strategically about the future, was assessing the gaps in services in Memphis and where we were seeing people coming to our night-to-night emergency shelter who really were not appropriate for that. People mm-hmm. who were ill was one big group.
Mm-hmm.
We were sending them into congregations, but that wasn't ideal. We knew that. But the other began to be families, unsheltered families who were just showing up at our door, going from church to church each night, children missing school, those kinds of, we were starting to see more and more of that. People that had been evicted. So as Room in the Inn's reputation got around, that it was a safe option, and parents who were sleeping in cars then began to come to us. So we felt like that was another gap. We don't want to duplicate services. You know, it takes all of us to do this work. So we identified people who were medically fragile and families. So on this campus, we're able to do both.
Mm-hmm.
We have a restricted access family shelter program that can shelter 14 families at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with MIFA and their rapid rehousing program. We have some advocates on our staff that are constantly working with those families to get into permanent housing.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been a joy to us too. The campus is always lively because sometimes we have as many as 50 children. My favorite time of the day is when the school bus comes up comes to the front and everybody gets off the school bus. And we have several staff members who see the school bus coming and everybody goes to the lobby and, you know, it's high fives and how was your day? And so the Family Inn is thriving there.
Wonderful. What about the Family Advocates program?
So we have a housing stabilization mm-hmm. Component now. Very early, we welcomed our first guest a year ago Wednesday.
Oh.
So that's not too long mm-hmm. ago. It feels long now, but mm-hmm. We've learned a lot, and very quickly we learned that helping people to find housing, to move into housing, wasn't where we needed to leave this advocate position. So we're doing some wraparound follow-up after they've gone into housing now and have hired a part-time housing stabilization person.
Mm-hmm.
And hoping that will grow into more work with volunteers too.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I alluded to your sermon at our Lenten preaching series, which was one of the more powerful ones we heard and was so well attended. And you told some really powerful stories of lives being changed, not only those of the unsheltered neighbors, but those of volunteers as well. And I wondered if you could share, a story or two of maybe just some people whose lives have been transformed by this ministry, what you've seen.
This is daily, so finding one to share with
sure.
you is hard. But the one that pops into my mind that is the most recent that impacted me so profoundly this past week. We don't do medical care at our facility, and so sometimes we are working with people who come for volunteers from UT Health Sciences, and for example, who come to help with physical therapy for some of our guests.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a guest now who has mobility issues. He has issues with obesity, and so he has not been able to go anywhere else to stay. He's had hospital stays because of his health issues, and no other opportunities for him, even like rooming housing, houses, boarding houses, other shelters, can accommodate him. At first we thought, well, we can't really either.
Mm-hmm.
But we just felt strongly our recuperative care staff felt very passionate about figuring out a solution. So he came to stay with us, and the PT folks have been coming. We have a volunteer who's very faithful to come and work with him, and she has worked with him so that I came through the hall one time and he was standing up and everybody was cheering and, wow. you know, cheering him on to stand up longer. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, working hard. And he came in the front door with one our RCC advocate and in his wheelchair with this huge smile on his face. Mm-hmm. And he had just been to a job interview and been hired.
Oh,
and he just had this, you know, he was just glowing and everybody mm-hmm. was hugging and we were so happy for him. But he, the big thing, so he mm-hmm. got hired. That's huge. Mm-hmm. That changes his life, changes his possibilities. But the big thing that he said that impacted me was I didn't feel like I could do the exercises. I didn't feel like I could ever stand up again. But she made me believe that I could.
Yeah.
And so that's what enabled him to be able to get into the vehicle
wow.
to go to his job interview. And he said, I did it. And yeah. I did it because I had help and I, you know, kept working at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, you know, that's a small, for me, that's a small thing.
Yeah.
For him, it changed his life. And, you know, that's, we're seeing that every day.
Right. And Christine, I just, folks can't see, but you were really moved by that story. Tell us about some stories or how Room in the Inn has shaped your journey or stories that have stood out with you.
Well, my role at Room in the Inn so far is behind the scenes. I am doing work on the curriculum for our City Camp program. But I just have really been moved in by the willingness of people in the Memphis community to help me put a great curriculum together. I have reached out to folks that I have heard here on Faithfully Memphis. You just recently did the Family and Child series. I have reached out to folks I've heard on other WYXR programs looking for like field trip opportunities or folks to come in and talk or materials. And I mean, the outpouring has just been amazing. The just Lisa's work at Room in the Inn kind of speaks for itself. I mean, people are happy to help with this. And it's just been, it's really, it's just really touched my heart to feel that sense of community here in Memphis.
Powerful. And Lisa, tell us how churches, groups, and individuals can get involved in the ministry.
Well, your congregations, I would love to talk to congregations about becoming host sites.
Mm-hmm.
During COVID, about half of our congregations continued to shelter. That's amazing to me mm-hmm. that so many congregations continued to offer shelter to people this past year, even during COVID. But we're going to be ready to start back in full force in November, mm-hmm. back to some sort of normal. And so I would love to talk to any congregation that has a space that's not being used and volunteers that have a heart for this kind of ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way. Our campus is always open for volunteer opportunities. We have congregations and groups that provide meals. We have a 24/7 facility, so we feed people three times a day. So any meals that come in are appreciated and impact our budget for sure. So people that come in serve meals, and that gives them a chance to interact with our guests mm-hmm. and to see what we're doing in an up-close personal way. We have volunteer Odyssey slots online from our website, RITIMemphis.org,
mm-hmm.
and you can find the volunteer opportunities there. Many from sitting at the front desk to answer the phone and welcome people, which is a very important job, to story time with some of the kids. Like Christine mentioned, our summer day camp is coming up. We'll have lots of volunteer opportunities for that while the children are out of school. So there's just anything that you feel like you have to give, we can find a place for you.
Right. And I want to close with our interview portion with, during the season of Easter, where are you finding and feeling resurrection?
Oh, certainly I just shared one of those stories. Just seeing people who in on our campus who just have a spark in them. Last Saturday we had a fun day, just a fun day for everybody, for our staff and for our guests, celebrating a year on the campus. We called it In Bloom because we were celebrating the ways that our guests have really blossomed and bloomed in their stay with us. And it's just all about resurrection, yeah. About feeling like things are not going to ever have light again, and then seeing that light shine. So I feel like 409 Ayers is just a resurrection place.
Absolutely.
And love showing it off, yeah. To anybody that wants to come.
Yeah, you can see visible signs of blooming right there.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Lisa, so much for joining us for this conversation. And thanks to Christine and Emily for joining in. And we're grateful for the Room in the Inn ministry, the life-changing resurrection it offers. Well, Emily and Christine, please share with us how we can give a little bread and water to WYXR.
Okay, well, Paul, you know that I do a lot for the diocese. And, you know, if it's not a podcast, if it's not a newsletter, if it's not an email. Well, this year I have been playing a lot with social media. God help us all that the 40-year-old is trying to figure out what she's doing. And I just went on our Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee Instagram account, and I created a fundraiser for WYXR. And I feel very good about myself that yes. I figured that out. But addition to going to WYXR.org and making a donation or a pledge of support for WYXR, you can also now go to our Instagram page. Now, this is the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. It's at Episcopal West TN, and go to our stories, go to our page, and there is a fundraiser that we just set up for WYXR. And if that is something that you know how to do, which I mean, I've set up this fundraiser. I have no idea if I actually know how to donate to it, but I'm sure that there are some youths out there who can figure it out and go and pledge their support if they want to do. And you can also go to WYXR on their Facebook and Twitter and Instagram presence and make a donation there as well. So, you know, make some, it can be digital bread and water, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it can be
yeah.
digital bread
it's
and
like,
water.
Is that what they're talking about when they say cryptocurrency? I don't know. I don't know. But there are lots of ways to give, and here's
yes,
just another one.
I believe
one
that WYXR will accept cryptocurrency.
I mean,
we could ask Robbie.
Robbie sure is in the studio, and I'm sure that even if they don't right now, if you want to give some cryptocurrency to them, maybe they can
make it out.
Yeah, they'll make that happen. Sure, it's no problem. No problem at all. But yeah.
So all you youngsters, donate in crypto.
Yeah, donate in crypto. Go to the Instagram. Do what you need to do to give your pledge of support to WYXR.
Yes, and you can donate by going to WYXR.org, or you can call 901-460-3031.
Well, speaking of the crypt, this next final segment.
Man, you're just firing all cylinders with the
segues. Here, yeah. Our next segment, Stump the Priest, we will tackle a difficult question about faith. And in view of being in this Easter season of resurrection, today's question is, what happens to us when we die? And in a Downton Abbey episode, Martha Levinson, the matriarch of the American side of the family, played by Shirley MacLaine, said to the Dowager Countess, the English matriarch played by Dame Maggie Smith, both of her husbands tied up the money tight before they were taken. The Dowager Countess looked over at her, pursed her lips, and responded, Lord Grantham wasn't taken, he died. Like Shirley MacLaine's character, we seem to find a lot of ways to avoid saying died. In a sampling of obituaries,
here are a few of the terms used instead. Passed away, passed from this life, passed away peacefully, went to be with the Lord, went to be with her or his Lord, went to be with Jesus, left this world and went on to be in a better place, transitioned into heaven, transitioned to his or her heavenly home, called home to be with the Lord, went to be with her or his heavenly Father, departed this life, peacefully departed this life, peacefully stepped out of this earthly life and into eternal life, left her or his earthly home, said goodbye to the world when she went into the arms of Jesus. Why do we go to such lengths to avoid saying he or she died? Perhaps the word died sounds too abrupt, too harsh, too real, too final, too down to earth. Perhaps we believe our loved ones are ascending, so we want our language about them to somehow be lofty and to ascend as well. But in the scriptures in Revelation, God's mission does not seem to be focused on taking us up into heaven. Instead, God's real mission is bringing heaven to earth, a little like what we heard Room in the Inn is doing. It is the fulfillment of the petition we offer in the Lord's Prayer, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven." John, in his heavenly vision, sees the New Jerusalem, the holy and heavenly city, not only coming down to earth, but being adorned for marriage with earth. He sees the ultimate home of God not being way up in the clouds, but God down here, living and breathing among mortals, wiping away every tear from our eyes. Bishop and biblical theologian N.T. Wright wrote a groundbreaking book centered on this and other scriptural passages about death in the afterlife entitled "Surprised by Hope: Rethinking Heaven, the Resurrection, and the Mission of the Church." He argues that Christ's bodily, active resurrection is ultimately extended to all of us in death. He explains this different way of seeing death this way. So far from sitting on clouds playing harps, as people often imagine, the redeemed people of God in the new world will be agents of God's love, going out in new ways to accomplish new creative tasks to celebrate and extend the glory of his love. The work of the Communion of Saints is best expressed in one of the prayers from the burial office in the Book of Common Prayer. Grant that, increasing in knowledge and love of thee, she may go from strength to strength in the life of perfect service in thy heavenly kingdom. While we may not know the exact nature of this service, it sounds like there will be work for us to join with Christ in accomplishing on the other side of death. Easter is not just a day, but a season to acknowledge that, by the virtue of our baptism, we too are a part of the communion of saints. We too have been risen to new life in Christ, and our eternal life of service and devotion has already begun. Instead of simply awaiting the reward of life after death, we seek to live a rewarding life both before and after death. Instead of asking, "Am I going to be taken up into heaven?" Bishop Wright and the Dowager Countess invite us to ask a different and far more interesting question. How do we join Christ and join our fellow saints in being a part of bringing heaven to earth? Emily and Christine, tell us how we can all imagine a bright future for WIXR right here in the here and now.
Well, keep listening, first and for all. You know, even if you don't have a lot to give today, keep listening to the station. You know, Faithfully Memphis is something that's really special to us in the Diocese of West Tennessee, but there are countless others here in Memphis who are, and this is 100% local, so you're going to, every time you tune to WYXR, you're going to hear from people here in Memphis and Shelby County who are doing amazing work and creating a culture of sharing and of beauty. So first of all, listen in and share the station with a friend who may not know that we've got this jewel here at Crosstown Concourse. And then, where should we go, Christine?
Well, you can donate easily by going to wyxr.org, and there's a donate button right there. How easy is it?
It's so easy. Anybody can do it. Anybody can do it. Just go to wyxr.org. you will get, you know, in addition to the amazing programming that you hear every day, every night, you're also, they'll give you some little tchotchkes, some fun stuff. The, you know, I love some branded tchotchkes.
Yes, they have great stickers.
Yeah, you'll get some stickers.
And, I've got a laptop covered with WYXR stickers.
Yes, they are solid stickers for sure. I've got one on my car. But you'll get some good little trinkets, but you'll also just know that the arts are alive and well here in Memphis, and we're beaming them out. And so you're going to be supporting an amazing alliance between the University of Memphis and the Daily Memphian, which is WYXR. So WYXR.org. Go there and
donate today.
Thank you guys so much for being in the studio with us today.
Oh, thank you guys. Thanks to Lisa, Emily, and Christine for our conversation this morning. And you can find Room in the Inn at ritimemphis.org. You are also all invited to a beautiful service of sung evening prayer at Calvary Episcopal Church this Sunday, May 1st at 5 p.m., and you can learn more at calvarymemphis.org. You can find the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee on Facebook, Instagram, and at edwtn.org. You can also listen to past episodes of Faithfully Memphis on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Please like and subscribe. This is Reverend Paul McLean for Faithfully Memphis. Until next time, stay safe and stay positive.